Hello and welcome to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. We're told U.S. President Joe Biden does not want the standoff with Russia over Ukraine to trigger a global war. The evidence suggests just the opposite. NATO now uses Ukraine to attack Russia. Have no doubts, Russia will respond. Crosstalking NATO, I'm joined by my guest, Dimitri Laskaris, in Athens. He is a lawyer and a freelance journalist. In Bali, we have Carl Zhao. He is a political analyst, historian, and host of the Silk and Steel podcast. And in Beijing, we cross to Shi Wen. She is an international affairs commentator as well as a CGTN radio reporter. All right, Crosstalk rules in effect. That means you can jump anytime you want, and I always appreciate it. Carl, let me go to you first in Bali, far from the fray in Ukraine here. I mean, it's really quite remarkable. But we have this new phrase now, adapt and adjust. That's what NATO is doing right now when it comes to arming Ukraine, except for now, you can use NATO equipment to shoot just a little bit into Russia's territory, which, of course, they've been doing for over a year now. But now that's part of their adapt and adjust. I mean, this is the path to war, and it's a NATO war against Russia. They can no longer say they're not part of the conflict. They've been part of the conflict from day one. As a matter of fact, they started this conflict. Go ahead, Carl.
Well, NATO is losing its proxy war against Russia. Right now, they're scrambling, trying to do whatever they can, try to salvage the situation. So they now have to be more upfront about their involvement. But, you know, politicians in Washington have been very explicitly saying this is a war, this is a proxy war, they're fighting Russians using the Ukrainians. They're fighting Russia to the last Ukrainians. This has always been their policy.
Well, it's very interesting. Let's go to our guest in Beijing. We keep hearing about Ukraine has the right to self-defense. Well, it's a sovereign country. Of course it has the right to self-defense. But NATO's approach to this conflict, this proxy war, as Carl's pointed out here, Russia is not allowed to have the idea of self-defense. So you have American weapons in Ukraine going into Russia, killing civilians, because it's primarily what they've done so far, and Russia is warned not to react. Well, this is not how it works. Russia will obviously react, and it is Russia's already warned the West that it will. Go ahead in Beijing.
You're right, Peter. Actually, as President Putin said recently, if the NATO and also U.S.-led NATO eases its restriction on for Ukraine to use Western's weapons, there will be serious consequences on that. And actually, we know that as you mentioned at the beginning, that Blinken said that the U.S. position was the hallmark of the Biden administration's stance on Ukraine to adapt and adjust as needed. So we can see that the U.S. policy, its foreign policy, has been changing time over time. And it always contradicts itself. And it's also more interesting is that President Biden said he will not attend the upcoming summit in Switzerland, despite Zelensky is urging Biden to go. But instead, Biden is sending his Vice President Harris to be there. So I think it's somehow ironic to see that the U.S. approves Ukraine's use of the Western-supplied weapons on Russia, which will indeed escalate the conflict in the region. And so I'm highly doubtful about the upcoming result of the peaceful summit.
Yeah, I want to talk about that in the second part of the program. Dimitri, I mean, again, you know, adapt and adjust. I mean, this is a farce. I mean, the goal has always been nothing to do with Ukraine. It's about to inflict a strategic defeat on Russia. This has been the policy from the get-go. Now, saying allowing the Ukrainians to use these weapons to shoot missiles and drones into Russia, it's NATO forces that are the command and control of those missiles and drones. These are Americans and Europeans making the targeting coordinates and everything else related to firing these arms. I mean, this is absolutely a farce. And of course, Zelensky, his name has already been mentioned here. He wants this. He wants NATO to go to war over for his country. And this is something that the United States and NATO seem to be quite willing to go and proceed. Go ahead, Dmitry.
Well, the targeting, which is clearly coming from American military personnel, because Ukraine doesn't have the capacity to do that. The manufacture of the weapons, which is clearly coming from the United States, and the United States doesn't even deny that, is only part of the story. In addition, you have U.S. military personnel. They may not be formally designated as active members of the military, although some of them are. They've been trained by the U.S. military and other Western powers fighting alongside the Ukrainians on the front line. You have the training. Again, this is not being denied. Tens of thousands of Ukrainian soldiers trained to NATO standards, whatever that means, by the admission of Western governments. You have an economic war that was being waged upon Russia. Again, the Western powers were not denying this. They were openly bragging about the economic warfare they waged, and it's been a disaster. In every conceivable respect, this has been a war by NATO against Russia, and that has been clear from the outset. And this whole nonsense that this is simply a Ukrainian war with the support of NATO is something that we ought to have seen 3 months ago. This phrase, by the way, adapt and adjust, it's a relative phrase. It begs the question of what are they adapting and adjusting to?
Yep.
What they're adapting and adjusting to is a crushing loss on the Ukrainian battlefield. So they're responding to this crushing loss, which they've now realized they cannot avoid, by taking the fight, or trying to, deep into the territory of Russia, with the horrendous consequences that potentially entails. So people need to wake up and listen to the French anthropologist Emmanuel Todd, who authored a book recently which was entitled World War III Has Begun. It has, folks.
Yes, I've done a program on that, Dmitry. We are in World War III right now. And we could actually talk maybe on another program about how the different blocks are lining up. I agree with that completely. You know, Carl, this adapt and adjust, I mean, giving the green light, and this is all the public relations spin here for Ukraine to do that. Of course, no, it's NATO that's going to be doing that in Ukraine and outside of Ukraine, quite possibly. But that doesn't change the conditions of the battlefield in Ukraine. You can take out a refinery in Russia, but it's not going to change the course of the conflict in Ukraine. Again, this has nothing to do with Ukraine. What it has to do is to push Russia into a much more aggressive posture. That's what they want, and they'll say, see, that guy started it. That's exactly what they're trying to do. Carl.
That's exactly what they're trying to do. And whatever they do, you know, strike is deeper into Russia, that's not going to have any material effect on the outcome of the war in Ukraine, because right now Russia is having the upper hand on the battlefield. No matter whatever this adjustment NATO is making, is not making a difference. All it does is to make the Russian public to rally more solidly behind President Putin in its special military operation in Ukraine. So I don't. This is really a very desperate last ditch effort by the NATO alliance to salvage it's a face saving operation now.
Well, I mean, Carl, I mean, you used the metaphor of face saving, but essentially what they're going to get is egg on their face, which really bothers me here. Let's go back to our guest in Beijing, because the more NATO loses and the more it deploys a losing strategy, the more aggressive the NATO alliance is going to become, because they do not want to lose face. They're the ones that are saying, if we lose in Ukraine, Russian tanks will roll into Paris or to the English Channel, which is absolutely absurd. Even American and British intelligence have agreed with that, but that's not the public relations spin. The problem here is that we're having to contend with a public relations campaign from the West and not about realities on the ground. Go ahead, in Beijing.
You're right, Peter. Actually, if you look at the data, over 99% of the supplies, whether it be military supply, financial supply, or humanitarian aid to Ukraine, came from NATO and the U.S. So if they're not pouring those weapons to Ukraine, this conflict could have, I mean, see a result, at least have a back to the negotiation table earlier than what we're seeing today. And you're right, we are seeing that the mainstream media in the West have been not very, I'll say, balanced when it comes to its reports on the Russia-Ukraine conflict. And I think that's why it's important for us to have this conversation now and to talk about, like, we no longer need, you know, like the ease restrictions on the Western-made weapons to Ukraine. And what's more interesting is that if you have, if you could recall that for many times we hear U.S. officials are saying, Washington will fight until the last of the Ukrainian.
That's right.
So that's very, yeah, that's very ironic because it's, they're not fighting until the last of America or the last of the Europeans. They're fighting until the last of the Ukrainians.
And plus, you know, they're making a lot of money in the process, okay? That the profit motive is in play here. You know, Dmitry, they keep saying they want to, you know, by adapting and adjusting to improve Ukraine's position at the negotiating table. Well, number one, there is no negotiating table. No one has invited Russia to it. And the longer they do this, the smaller Ukraine gets. So what is improving their position? Go ahead, Dmitry.
Well, this so-called, any so-called peace conference that doesn't include your adversary is not a conference of peace, it's a conference of war. What they're trying to do, obviously, to those of us who are sane and objective, is marshal more support to put pressure on Russia to capitulate. And the terms that Zelensky has articulated from the outset are precisely that. They're a complete and utter capitulation, which takes no account of the legitimate grievances of Russia. It takes no account of the coup in 2014. It takes no account of the human rights abuses of the Russian speakers in the Donbass. It takes no account of the assurances that were given to Gorbachev that NATO would not expand one inch eastward. It gives no account to Russia's legitimate concerns about NATO nuclear-tipped missiles just a few hundred miles from Moscow on Ukrainian territory. This is a demand for capitulation.
It's a demand for capitulation, and that's why so many major countries are not going to participate here. I'm going to jump in here. We're going to go to a hard break, and after that hard break, we'll continue our discussion on NATO. Stay with RT.
Уважаемые граждане России, мною принято решение о проведении специальной военной операции.
Когда все началось, была паника. Как вообще такое может быть, когда мы вообще все привыкли красиво где-то выходить и завтракать, вообще такие все с прическами, с макияжем?
Наверное, есть некоторое чувство вины еще. Я с 2014 года побывала в 23 странах. Я лежала на пляже на Мальдивах. Гуляла по Европе. Вот зачастую меня спрашивают, ты можешь хотя бы один день телеграм не читать? Я говорю, не могу. Там бойца надо забрать из одной воинской части резервную в другую. Если сегодня не прочитаю, не сообщу в пол, его заберут штурмовики.
Сейчас же все говорят, что вот элита, она там против СВО. Может быть, у моей героини другое мнение. Посмотрим.
Welcome back to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter LaBelle. To remind you, we're discussing NATO. Okay, let's go back to Carl and Bali. You know, we've already mentioned this ridiculous peace conference, so-called peace conference, that will be held this month from the 15th to the 18th in Switzerland. The oddity of it all is that we have a peace proposal from the Chinese. We have one from Africa. I think the papacy weighed in. There's a lot of peace plans out there. If you look at the demands that the Russia sent out in December of 2021 to NATO and to the United States about securing a new security architecture in Europe. That is actually part of the process. But they're all ignored. That's a long introduction, Carl, to saying the West has no idea about how to bring peace. All they do is know how to keep the war going on. That's obviously true from their policies over 2 years. Go ahead.
That has been, the West has so much hubris that it denies that Russia even have legitimate security interests. President Putin has made a very clear call back in 2007 Munich Security Conference when he warned the West that they could no longer make a mockery of Russian security interests and renege on their promises forever. And now we have witnessed what happened. But what we're witnessing right now is the NATO establishment itself is still in denial on their total failure to degrade Russia's capability on the battlefield. The Ukrainian manpower is being depleted. Russia has the upper hand, and this is why they have to act. The NATO forces have to be more upfront about their involvement because the Ukrainians are not holding up their line against Russian offensive right now.
Well, you know, when in Beijing, the Chinese proposal is probably the most balanced of them all. Okay, it talks about in terms of how to get to an end game. Every country should have secure borders. Their sovereignty should be respected. Those aren't details, but that's a good way to start. That's how you start the negotiation process. And what we have with this Zelensky peace plan, so-called, which was probably drafted in London or in Washington, D.C., is basically saying, Russia, you must admit defeat, okay? You should surrender to the first Ukrainian tank you see. I mean, that's not how it works. There's no imagination when it comes to diplomacy in the West anymore.
You're right, Peter. Actually, you know, at the past Sri Lanka summit in Singapore, Zelensky, he was accusing China for not taking his sides. Actually, China, there is no such a thing as China is pressuring other nations not to attend the peace summit in Switzerland, nor is helping Russia to disrupt the summit. In fact, as you mentioned, China's position on the Russia-Ukraine conflict has been very consistent, and it does not target any specific party and certainly does not oppose the summit. In fact, as you mentioned, China's position on this, I would say, conflict remains. There are three important elements in China's perspective that a successful peace summit should have. The first is that recognition of from both Russia and Ukraine. The second is that equal participation of both parties. And the last is that a fair discussion on all possible peaceful plans. However, if we look at the situation now, obviously the upcoming summit in Switzerland has not met these three important criteria. And first, the summit was not recognized by Russia. The second, the summit did not invite Russia. And third, when one of the most important players in this conflict was not invited to the table, how can we guarantee there are going to be an open dialogue to ensure a possible peaceful, you know, plan coming out of the summit? So I think that's the most important reason why China is not participating, because China believes that a peaceful conference, the upcoming peace conference in Switzerland can hardly play a substantive role to resolve the issue. Moreover, I think it's important to point out that not participating into the summit does not mean China does not support peace. And for certain nations who are participating into the summit does not mean they are genuinely supporting peace, because China just does not want to see that they upcoming summit become a platform to support, you know, confrontation among camps.
So, all it's going to be is a PR stunt for NATO. That's it. And their they're going to have their A-lister Zelensky, whose legitimacy is quite dubious at this point in time, violating the Constitution of Ukraine. You know, Dmitry, what I worry about, and I've worried about since the first day of this conflict, and I know I said it on this program, eventually we will get to an Article 5 crisis. I believe that now more than ever. Your thoughts?
Yes, I think we are definitely heading that direction because Russia will be left with no alternative.
Yeah.
And it's already signaled that it's going to have to strike military assets in Central or Western Europe. I think that's quite clear. For example, there's a large staging area in Poland from which a number of these weapons, a lot of training, a lot of the intelligence is gathered. This is, under international law, clearly a legitimate target, and Russia has refrained from striking it for months. But it's very clear that it'll have no alternative if they keep attacking military targets deeper and deeper into Russia. And the key question, of course, is going to be, as Russia has said explicitly, how will the United States respond when Russia inevitably attacks one of these European legitimate military targets? If the people of the United States have their way, the United States will stay out of it. But the problem here, and those of us who live, you know, have a front row view of what goes on in the United States, as I do because I spend a lot of my time in Canada, is that the United States political elite doesn't care what the people want. It couldn't care less about the interests of Americans. If the Americans had their way, there would be a lot less military spending and these wars of aggression would never have happened. So this is the real danger, is that the U.S. political elite will respond to the Article 5 call from Europe that will inevitably come, despite the demands of the populace to refrain from World War III in its hottest phase. We're already in a low-intensity World War III, as we talked about, Peter, but we're heading to the hot phase. And I suspect we're going to end up in a full-blown conflagration, and I hope very much that I'm wrong.
Well, I hope you're wrong, and I hope I'm wrong. But, Carl, there's a certain logic of this. One of the biggest problems that we've faced in this conflict is the idea of deterrence has been so degraded by the West. See, if you want to have the idea of mutual assured destruction, deterrence, both parties have to believe in that theory. That's how we got through the Cold War. But we have one party now that is throwing that to the side. Russia is saying we have to deter this type of assault on us, but the West doesn't speak in that idiom anymore, and that's why everything is becoming extremely unstable. Because if you have long-range missiles or F-16s, okay, and they leave a base in Poland and they're on a mission, Russia's not going to know if they have nuclear-tipped missiles or not. You don't take those kind of chances. What you do is say, if we see a plane like that, it's going to be destroyed. And they're going to say it up front. And they're, you know what they're going to say, Carl? The Russians are bluffing. Russians don't bluff. They act. Carl.
So Western politicians are playing a very dangerous game of chickens right now. And I very much hope Dmitry is wrong, even though I very much respect his analysis. You know, during the Cold War, Nixon had pioneered the so-called madman theory, where if the West acts like a complete psycho, the other side will back down. This has worked with Soviet Union, but today's Russia is quite different political entity from Soviet Union of yesteryears. Mr. Putin has shown that he will not stand down from threat from NATO, and so we're gonna see either NATO will be called on its own bluff, or we'll have World War III. For the sake of everyone here, I hope Dmitry is wrong, and I hope the NATO bluff will be called and they will back down. And I think ultimately, people working in the military-industrial complex in Washington, their ultimate game is to lining their own pocket.
I think, Carl, you're onto something. What they like is threats. They need threat inflation. But if you go to the wall, then you lose your business model. Okay, I mean that's kind of the logic of it all here. When in Beijing, I suppose China's watching all of this very, very closely because what the Americans would like is a NATO in Asia, in the Pacific, and we know what target they have. It is Taiwan here. So I hope that the folks in Beijing are learning from the dirty tricks from the West.
You know, you're right. Many times people will compare, like, the case happened in Ukraine with Taiwan, but the thing is, Taiwan is totally different because it's not a country. It's not like Ukraine. Taiwan is part of China, and that's been agreed by most of the countries in the world, and also by the U.S. U.S. agrees with the One China principle,
I agree with you, dear, but they don't act that way. They don't act as if it's part of the same country.
That's U.S. typical U.S. foreign policy. It says one thing but acts another. So I think China is fully aware of that, and China will, remain as consistent foreign policy on Taiwan. And I think the world agree with even the UN. Like in the past, World Health event, the UN recognized China as the only and legal country in the UN. So I think that the global community supports that.
Yeah, but unfortunately, we've seen the United States in its relationship with China throw away just about every important bilateral agreement, going from the point of diplomatic relations. And so we see a template in Europe, and we see a template in Asia, and what it's called is the rules-based order. And when you hear the rules-based order, you should be afraid. That's all the time we have. I want to thank my guests in Athens, Bali, and, of course, in Beijing. And I want to thank our viewers for watching us here at RT. See you next time, and remember, crosstalk rules.